And this is Changing the Narrative. I'm your host, David Reeves, and I also have a friend with me here today. For those of you who are listening, there is a blue tongue skink that I'm holding currently. We are changing the narrative every week on this podcast. We're changing the narrative of atheism back to the truth of God's creation. And I have a friend with me. We're joined again in studio with Michael Mahon. Now, Michael, I want to welcome you to the program, number one. And I want to welcome you. You have a guest yourself. Who is this?
I do. This is Cracker, one of our green wing macaws.
And that is a beautiful bird right there. Michael, you have an animal sanctuary in East Tennessee. Tell me just a little bit about that.
Yeah. So we take animals. We take in rescued exotic animals. And we train them and we use them for our educational programs, teaching people about the truth of God's word and the design of the animal kingdom.
I love that. Now, we've learned your story in the past because you have a truly remarkable story, but I just want you to share a little bit about some of these creatures and visually describe them for those listening to the podcast, for those who are watching on YouTube or the video versions. You're seeing some of the creatures, but tell us, number one, about Cracker and some of the design features that is instilled in that creature.
Yeah. So green-winged macaws are the second largest species of macaw in the world. And one really cool thing is on their face, they have this beautiful white face patch. That's just their skin. And they have all these little red feathers. Okay. And that pattern is unique to each green-winged macaw. So that's her fingerprint.
So that's like a fingerprint, basically.
Yeah. You can tell green-winged macaws apart by that facial pattern.
How about that? But there's no other than those tiny, tiny little bits of red feathers sticking out. It's almost like a naked area around their eye.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So just those little red feathers. And it's really cool to see because you can tell the macaws apart. They are very, very different.
Yeah.
Very, very different patterns.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Tell us about some of the other features.
Yeah, so her beak is designed to crush the hardest nuts on the planet. You can give her a walnut and she'll break into it like it's not even there.
Really?
Really powerful beak. She could chew through a 2x4 in a few hours. Very destructive. They like to chew on stuff.
Yeah. You've brought a little perch sitting behind you right there, and I see on the wooden beams, on the edges of the wooden beams, it looks like she's been chewing on that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So she does. She loves to chew on that. Sometimes we'll put them on those, and they will chew through them before the program's over.
Is that right?
Yeah. They are amazing, amazing chewers. How are you going to go on my shoulder? Thank you. So they have that big beak, and it has the upper and lower mandible move. So they get this mechanical advantage and it lets them crush these really hard nuts. Thank you. She's grooming me right now.
That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So she's standing on your shoulder and
thank you.
Grooming your hair right now.
Yes, she is. Thank you so much. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So Cracker's my bird.
Okay.
She came from an abuse situation.
Okay.
And that's why she doesn't have any feathers. But one really cool thing about her not having those feathers is you can see some of the incredible design that God gave them that you can't see. There goes that shirt. The incredible design features that you can't see on a normal bird. Okay. So you can see if you look right under on her throat, she'll have a big lump.
I see that.
And so that lump is her crop. It's like a food storage container.
Okay.
So as she eats seeds, nuts, fruit, it goes into that storage container and then empties into her stomach.
Wow.
Really cool. And it's really fun. When she eats a lot, let's give her a peanut.
Yeah.
When she eats a lot, you'll see it fill up and it gets really, really big.
Okay, so now she's taking... Yeah. She's taken the peanut.
Mm.
She just deshelled it.
That's good, isn't it?
Oh, that's crazy.
And they can hold their food.
Yes.
So their feet have two toes in the front, two in the back. That's called zygodactyl.
Zygodactyl.
And they can hold their food while they eat. So they can sit up in the trees on a branch that's moving.
Yeah.
And they can hold and they can deshell, get what they want. And they throw everything else on the ground and make a huge mess.
How about that?
Yeah.
With such precision.
I know. And you can give them a sunflower seed. And yeah. if you've ever tried to crack a sunflower seed in your mouth, you know it's really hard.
It is.
She can do it in like less than a second, half a second. She can pull it out, get this nut, the part she wants out, and spit the shell out. So quickly. It's incredible. Is that
okay, so those, her feet, they look sharp. Does she ever use those? I mean, like, does she ever like grab you too hard or
she usually just sits. She holds on as hard as she needs to. Okay. When they get too long though, we'll trim them back.
I got you.
Just because in the wild they wear them down a lot more than they do.
Yeah.
And we try to strategically place perches that are really rough in her cage that she'll get on to help us not have to trim her nails super, super often.
That's amazing. Okay. Okay, so talk about the coloration. Are the males and the females, are they the same or?
Yes. Okay. So you can't tell them apart.
Wow.
There's some like telltale signs, but it's not 100% sure. Yeah. So the males and females look alike. Uh-huh. So if you want to know what they are, you either have to DNA sex them or surgically sex them.
Wow.
So they cut a little hole and they put a tube in them that they can look through.
Yeah.
And they look and they can see if it's a male or a female.
That is crazy.
So I actually don't know what Cracker is.
Yes.
We think she's a girl, but we don't know.
Okay. But she's definitely bonded with you. She doesn't like other people or?
Some people she just kind of doesn't like. And then other people like my wife, she hates. She will sit on the floor and she'll go in between my legs. Uh-huh. And if my wife gets anywhere near her, she will charge her and try to bite her.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. So let's talk about their feathers for a minute.
That's yummy.
I hope we caught that on the microphones. Yeah. She said that tastes really good. Let's talk about their feathers. With many birds, they will molt in pairs and regrow in pairs. Talk about that.
Yeah. God thought of everything when he made the animals. They molt their feathers. They're replacing them, getting new feathers, and they'll do it in pattern. So if she loses one wing feather on one side, she'll lose the same feather on the other side within about 48 hours.
Is that right?
Yeah. And so that helps keep her balanced. If these can't fly, they die.
Right.
So if you don't have that built in, molting in patterns from the very beginning, you'd have a lot of birds losing too many feathers on one side. They can't fly, and a grounded bird is a dead bird.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. When you think about an airplane, it is built with symmetry.
Yes.
If one rudder moves in a different way than the other rudder, all of a sudden it's taken a completely different path in the sky, right? It's turning, it can wildly spin around. If you were to take a chunk out of one wing without it being perfectly symmetrical, then all of a sudden you would have incredible difficulties making that aerodynamic. But you're saying the same thing happens with birds, where if they lost several feathers on one side of their body, if they didn't have those feathers missing on the other side of their body, then all of a sudden there's this unbalance if they're trying to fly.
Yeah.
But God has made provision for that by allowing them, if they lose feathers, if they molt feathers on one side of their body, within a couple of days, the exact same feathers are going to molt on the opposite side.
Yes, and they won't lose too many at once.
Okay.
So they'll lose them kind of in a pattern, and that way they still have enough surface area.
For flight.
For flight. And their feathers are amazing. So each one of their feathers on their wings, they have individual muscles. Those feathers are attached into the bone, so they're anchored really good. But she can move each one of her wing feathers individually, side to side, up and down, and rotate them.
Really?
Yes. Really, really cool. And then all of her feathers, all of these feathers have muscles. You'll see her stand those feathers up. So if I can reach her. She loves head scratches.
Okay.
So a lot of times she'll put her head down and she'll just kind of lightly fluff those up, and she wants me to scratch her head.
Oh, wow.
And you can see how she can pick up and lay down those feathers.
Yeah.
And that way, if they get out of line, she can kind of pick them up and rearrange them and get
them
back.
And then lay them back.
So they're laying down nice and smooth, perfectly aerodynamic.
That's crazy. Yeah. That is crazy. Now, she was, did she eat the shell there? I heard her crunching something, or is she just picking? No.
She crunches them up here. Okay. Here's an actual peanut. She crunches.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
She crunches them up, and she just likes to chew on stuff. She'll use the shell as a toy.
I gotcha.
And then as she's eating those peanuts, she has a hard, bony tongue.
Okay.
And so she kind of uses that to manipulate the food in her mouth.
Okay.
And so with a peanut, a lot of times there's two or three nuts in the shell.
Yes.
She'll pull them out and she'll put some of them in her bottom beak under her tongue.
Okay.
And hold them there while she gets the rest of them out. And then she'll eat them one at a time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she usually grinds them up. And if you look closely, she not only is she taking off the outer shell, she's taking off the inner pilling to that. She doesn't want to eat that.
So she's very particular.
Very particular.
With such precision. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Let's shift gears just a little bit, and let's talk about the blue tongue skink that is sitting here on my arm right now. And he's got this blue tongue that keeps darting in and out. And I know the cameras, if you're watching the podcast on video format, you can see the tongue going in and out. But he is definitely exploring his environment. Tell me about him.
Yeah. So they have a Jacobson's organ. So you see a snake. Snakes are known for smelling with their tongue.
Yes.
So in the top of his mouth, he has an organ called the Jacobson's organ. Mm-hmm. So he's flicking his tongue and he's tasting his environment.
So basically, there's this organ that connects directly to the brain.
Yes.
And by touching the tip of the tongue to that organ, it gives them a sense of their environment based on any particles that their tongue has picked up in the air.
Yes.
It's like a way to smell. It's a way to taste. It's a way to do everything.
Yeah. It's incredible. It helps them find food.
Huh.
And then, like you said, his tongue is bright blue.
Okay.
So why does this animal have a bright blue tongue? What does that do for them? That's their defense mechanism. This lizard has really tiny legs. It's a very heavy-bodied lizard with very, very small legs.
Very small legs.
And those small legs, when they're like burrowing under the ground, they help not get in the way so they can move under loose leaf litter and go down in burrows. And they're very effective at that. But if they're out in the open looking for food and they get caught, they're pretty slow. They can't pick their body up off the ground.
Right.
So as they walk, it's gonna crawl on his belly.
Okay.
And that blue tongue is their defense mechanism. In nature, bright colors typically mean I'm poisonous, I'm venomous, stay away.
Right.
And so he is mimicking that.
So tiny little lizards a lot of times can just run away if there's danger. They're very nimble. Mm. But you're saying that because he can't move as fast, the Lord has actually given him another mechanism to say stay away, and he's mimicking poisonous or venomous animals.
Yes. Yeah, God gave him a way out.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so are these his ears back here behind?
Yes, they are. So that's where he hears, and they have external ear openings. Snakes don't have external ear openings.
Yeah.
And he can also close his ears. So they like to go under the ground, and he doesn't want to get dirt in his ears.
Sure.
So he has a little flap, and he can pinch off that flap, close his ears, so he doesn't get dirt when he's going under the ground.
How about that?
Yeah.
All right, where do you typically find them?
This is a northern blue-tongued skink, and they are found in Australia.
Okay.
But there are a few different types of blue-tongued skinks. You can find them in Australia, Indonesia.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
This is crazy. This is a beautiful thing. All right, so a lot of times our viewing and listening audience, they want to know, would this be a good pet? Would this be something good to keep? What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so the blue-tongued skinks are relatively good pets.
Okay.
You do have to make sure you do your research before you get any type of animal. Mm-hmm. They do need special lighting. They need UVA and UVB lighting.
Okay.
If you don't give it to them, it will cause them to get sick and eventually die.
Okay.
They need proper diet, so you need to research that. They're going to eat. We feed them like a really high quality cat food.
Okay.
And then he also gets a lot of insects and greens.
Interesting.
Yeah, so they're omnivores. And
they're omnivores.
You'll get the occasional mouse.
Gotcha.
You got to do a lot of research, but these are pretty good pets. They're really relaxed lizards. So if you want, thank you, Cracker. She's preening my face right now. Giving me nice kisses.
That is so neat.
Yeah, they're pretty easy pets for the most part. They're very chill and they're handleable. They're pretty hardy, so it's not going to be something that if you mess up a little bit that you're going to kill typically.
Right.
But you do want to make sure that you give them the best possible environment that you can.
And the UVA and UVB
is critical.
Is critical.
Yeah.
It's providing different types of heat and different types of light.
Yes.
Okay.
And they need that to be able to metabolize calcium, all that stuff. And if you give them the wrong diet, like if you feed them spinach, it can bind the calcium and cause metabolic bone disease.
Wow.
Which makes their bones super brittle, like osteoporosis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. When it comes to different types of animals, you've worked with a lot, and I've had you on Wonders Without Number to talk about some of the animals. We have, you've brought owls into the Wonder Center. You've allowed owls to fly in the rotunda of the Wonder Center, which was a crazy experience. That was so neat. What is your favorite type of animal to work with?
I really like birds.
Okay.
Birds fascinate me. Yeah. They can fly, which is awesome. They're beautiful. They come in every color of the rainbow.
Yeah.
I love working with birds. I love birds of prey especially.
Okay. They're
really, really neat animals.
The birds of prey are fascinating. They're larger than a lot of the other types of birds in some cases, but I've always loved the whole idea of falconry, never got into it, but it's something that maybe someday I'd like to pursue. What I enjoy, so I do lead African photo safaris to South Africa, and I'll take, 30, 40 people over. I love that. Cracker's just peanut. Like, that's a great peanut. Yep. Over into the bushveld, and we see all of these different types of birds. And some are birds of prey, some are, you've got the gray lory, the go-away bird. You've got the hoopoe birds with the crowns that stick up. You've got the kingfishers, which are kind of like our hummingbirds, and yet they're still completely different. Tell me about the design of some of your favorite birds.
Yeah, so I love macaws.
Okay.
They have really cool personalities, and they're just so smart.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, you're a bird brain. You should be like, thank you. Like, these are so smart. They have the cognitive ability of, like, a 4-year-old kid.
Yes.
Very, very smart. But they have the personality of a 2-year-old kid. So that's where the issue is. They're very hard pets.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't recommend them. We have, 35, 40 parrots.
Wow.
At any given time. And they're just very, very demanding animals.
Yeah.
But when you're working with them, it's amazing if you can learn how to communicate with them.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll use a clicker, and I'll teach her that clicker means good.
Okay.
Once she knows that, you can teach a bird a behavior in a few minutes.
Really?
They'll pick it up. Yeah. Once they know and they want to interact with you, you can teach them to like wave or hold out their wing, and it doesn't take very long to get them to understand what you're after.
So they're quick learners.
They're very quick learners. To get them to do it every time on repeat perfectly, that takes a while. But just to get them to understand, like, hey, I want you to wave.
Yeah.
And they'll pick up their foot. And it's really incredible to see how smart they are, especially when they're interested in doing it.
Okay. So for interest, do you train them with every time you click the clicker, you give them something to eat, or how do you praise them?
Yeah, so these are positive.
Okay.
Positive birds. You can't punish them. They don't get that.
Okay.
So it's all positive reinforcement training.
Yeah.
So we'll click the clicker when she does what we're asking.
Yeah.
And then she gets a treat, which peanuts are treats.
Okay.
She's getting lots of them right now, and she is
very happy.
Super happy about it. And then with the birds of prey, they're very just interesting. They're so different from the parrots.
Okay.
And owls are on the less smart side of the bird of prey world. They have the wise old owl, but that's not.
So all of these things, bird brain doesn't necessarily make sense. The wise owl doesn't make It's like we're questioning every phrase we've ever heard today.
Yeah. Yeah. The wise old owl, they're not that smart, but they are so well designed.
Okay.
To do what they do. They don't have to like figure it out. They're kind of that dumb jock.
Right.
If you know what I'm saying. They're so good at what they do. They have silent flight. They have really powerful feet. They are massive birds. They can see when it's really dark. They can hear. Some owls can hunt in pitch black just off their hearing.
Wow. Almost like bats.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, the bats do the sonar, but these guys, some of the owls, like barn owls, have offset ear holes.
Okay.
So they have one higher than the lower. One is higher, one is lower. Yep. They're asymmetrical. And they can pinpoint. They can create like a 4D auditory image.
Really?
Of what they're hunting. And it's so cool to see that, because they'll put a little like squeaker in the grass and the owl in pitch black and they can fly to it.
You have one thing that you do in some of your shows where you'll release birds from across a big auditorium and they come flying across and land in a particular area. Is that something that takes quite a while, or do they generally gravitate towards perches that they feel is home?
So that depends on the bird, but yeah, some of the birds are super easy. They love to fly, and they know that that perch is where I go to get a treat.
Yeah.
So we train them like, you go to this, or we'll use a color, and that's when you get your treat. So they'll go. It takes a while to flight train them, but when you change environments a lot, and we go to a lot of different places, so that takes a little bit longer. If you fly them in the same place, they're comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're moving around, it takes a little bit longer.
Okay.
Alex the owl, he loves his perch.
Okay.
He knows that perch is home. And so as soon as he sees it, you get him within like 5 feet and you give him a little cue.
Yeah.
And he'll go to it.
Is that right? That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've brought one more animal today, haven't you?
Mm.
Do you have?
Yes, I have.
Have one more?
I do.
I don't want to. I know you have to kind of put him on a perch at this point, but I would love to see the last creature that you've brought, and this is something that we're going to actually see tonight in the Wonders Theater. You're going to be gracing the stage.
Hey.
You are going to be live on Genesis Science Network, which is actually.
Step up.
I don't know. There's a bit of a risk to it because you never know what will happen with live animals. We had a situation just yesterday, was it? Where you brought a very large tortoise, and that tortoise tried to back its way off of a table on television as we're filming an episode. A 60-pound tortoise. And you're trying to catch this thing before it falls to its doom. So I know animals are unpredictable, but you're going to have a lot of animals up on the stage, as well as we're going to do some audience interaction with a filled to capacity, about 450 people, allow them to look at these animals close up, right?
Yes. We're very excited about it. And yeah, things can go wrong quickly with a bunch of live animals. So
now, what is this last creature that you're holding?
This is a Western hognose.
Okay.
And this is one of the coolest species of snake. He's full grown. This is a full grown male Western hognose.
Okay.
So they stay pretty small. But they have some really cool features.
Yeah.
So their defense mechanism, we'll talk about that really quick. They get their name hognose from that little shovel, hog nose.
Yeah, yeah.
And they use it like a shovel.
It's really stout. Okay.
Yeah. So they'll use it to dig. And they can flatten their head out, kind of like a cobra.
Okay.
So if you come up on one and you're scaring them, threatening a predator,
yeah.
They flatten out the head and they hiss and they puff.
Really?
So they go, and they'll strike.
Yeah.
But when they strike, they don't open their mouth. They're just trying to scare you away.
Okay.
And so this guy's very cage aggressive. When you go in to get him at first, he'll do that little strike.
Uh-huh.
If that doesn't scare you away, they play dead. So they musk on themselves. It makes them smell really bad. They roll over on their back, and they play dead.
Really?
That way, whatever is trying to eat them will hopefully leave them alone.
How about that?
So that's what they're famous for, is playing dead.
Okay, so is he Does he try to bite very often, or is he pretty tame?
He's pretty tame. It's very rare for these to bite.
Yeah.
They are a rear-fanged venomous snake, so okay. they do have a very mild toxin. They're not considered harmful to humans, and that's why we can have this guy.
Gotcha.
But if they bite, they chew, and those fangs are in the back of their mouth, so they have to chew on you to actually get some of that venom into their prey, and it helps subdue it.
Okay.
And then they will swallow it a lot of times while it's still alive.
Wow.
And their venom, yeah, is not very powerful. If they bite you, they have to chew on you for a while. If they envenomate you, it's like a bee sting. So he bit me one time. I was petting a goat, and he smelled it on me, and he bit me. It was my fault that I got bit. Okay. And so, science, I let him chew on me for
you
a while.
To let him.
So I left him. I let him chew on me for probably close to 10 minutes.
Wow.
Just to see what would happen, because I was super curious. And and my hand got a little bit swollen. And
okay.
But it didn't really hurt. It wasn't a big deal.
That's so pretty neat.
It was less than a bee sting.
So. that is fascinating. I tell you, there's no end to the variety within the animal kingdom, and there's no end to the complexity in the design within the animal kingdom.
Yeah.
Do you have a social media? Where do we find you?
Our website is genesisanimalsanctuary.org.
Genesisanimalsanctuary.org.
Yeah.
I can't wait to keep up with more about what you're doing. I can't wait for tonight, because I know we are going to have an entire museum full of fascinated people, not just with the animals, but you might even do a handstand on stage, I hear.
Maybe. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. But maybe.
I can't wait. Michael Mahon, thank you for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. And thank you for joining me on Changing the Narrative. I'm your host, David Reeves, and until next time, I want you to remember to keep looking up, because truly the heavens and all of the creatures in the earth declare the glory of God. Find us on all social platforms to stay informed. Watch Genesis Science Network 24/7 for free on Roku, Fire TV, and on our website. Visit the world's largest origins-based store, creationsuperstore.com. Plan your trip to the Wonders Center and Science Museum just outside of Nashville, Tennessee. Donate to our nonprofit ministry to help us continue sharing truth.